It's Saturday, the 2nd of January, 2016. Happy birthday to Kirk Heinrich. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Brad J82. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast just like Brad J82, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. It doesn't get much simpler than that. Also, don't forget to check out Moneyball if you're living in Australia or New Zealand. It is the best Australian daily fantasy sports site. Lots of cash up for grabs there every day, and you can use your own NBA fantasy knowledge to win some money. Podcast a little bit late today, guys, so I do apologize for that. If anyone is up watching this podcast live, I'm going to be very shocked, because it's 10:30 on a Saturday night here, and about 5 a.m. on the East Coast in the States, I think, maybe 6 a.m., a very, very odd time. So if anyone's watching this live, please tweet at me and let me know, because I want to know why you're watching this live. But, you know, you can always watch it on YouTube, listen to it on iTunes, Stitcher, all the great podcast places. And of course, now the podcast, if you don't know, is now on Blog Talk Radio. So you can find it across on Blog Talk Radio. And if you're new to the show, just discovering it through the Blog Talk Radio site, welcome. I hope you enjoy. I hope you enjoy the info that we're going to have on this site, on this show. That's enough of me babbling.
Let's get to it.
Let's do it. The monstrous line of the night goes to Johnny Wall of the Washington Wizards. Wall's great stretch of basically a bit over a month now continued. 39 minutes for Wall, 24 points, 2 rebounds, 13 assists. He added 2 steals, had a block. He went 10 of 19, and then he went 4 of 4 from the free throw line. Just had a tweet come in from Simonis Baranauskas, who says that Europe is watching. So I forgot about the people in Europe. So there are people watching live in Europe. Thank you. Thank you for tweeting that in, Simonis. Back to John Wall. That's another huge line, and big in the percentages. Yes, he had 5 turnovers, but you know my thoughts on turnovers. He's been fantastic, really. This last month, he's the 3rd ranked player for 8 category leagues. He's averaging 22 points a game, 1.5 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 12 assists, over 2 steals, 45 and 85 is his percentages. Really, really tearing it up. He's inside the top 10 on the season, basically right where you drafted him. And I've said this plenty of times throughout the preseason and the offseason. With your first round pick, as long as they return close to value, that's enough. You're not going to expect them to really exceed value. You just don't want them to drop 30, 40 places behind where you drafted them. If you draft someone at 8 and they end up ranked 13th, 14th, it doesn't matter. If you draft someone first and they end up 4th, doesn't matter. If you draft someone first and they end up 40th, that's where your problem is. And you drafted John Wall probably 9th or 10th. He's currently 8th, doing it brilliantly for you. And that massive last month from him, averaging or finishing 3rd, third over the last month of action, the 3rd ranked fantasy player, just behind Steph Curry, and Russell Westbrook was the other guy as well. So he's had a great run after, let's be honest, a pretty disappointing start from Johnny Wall. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Jose Calderon of the New York Knicks. He played 35 minutes, went 18-4-4, had 3 triples and a steal, 7 of 9 from the field, and point guards against the Bulls, they do pretty well, and Jose Calderon showed us that here. He's a guy that's owned in very few leagues, and I don't think that, I know that the percentage of leagues that he's owned in is not high enough. Now, he's not the sexiest guy out there, but his last 2 weeks, he's given you 1.5 threes, 4.5 assists, a steal a game on 61% shooting. Now, 61% shooting, you might go, that's high, but he is one of the best shooters of all time in the NBA, and that's not an exaggeration. He's at 48% on the season. He hasn't missed a free throw in his last 2 weeks. He's an awesome 3-point shooter. So the percentage is going to come down from 61, but you're still expecting high 40s. Last year, he was well down, and it was a disappointing year, but he's giving you threes. The 4.5 assists is what's really tough to find off the waiver wire. Add a steal in, add efficiency as well. Jose Calderon, yes, there's going to be nights where he gets limited, but we've seen Derek Fisher make lots of mistakes by not playing Jerry and Grant enough, and giving extra minutes to Jose Calderon, which I don't agree for the development of Grant, but you have to absorb what's happening. You have to look at what's happening with the Knicks, and if they're not playing Grant, and they're going to play Vucic out there. Well, Vucic is not good enough. Calderon's going to play some extra minutes. And again, if he's playing 27 minutes, that's not great. But if he's still giving you 4.5 assists in 27 minutes, then 4.5 assists is 4.5 assists. And it can be really tough to get. I think that in 12-team leagues, he doesn't have to be owned on your team, but I reckon he should be owned by one team in the NBA. Something probably will change at some point this season. He might lose minutes. But for now, Jose Calderon's putting up enough value where I think that to be owned in a 12-team league, he should be owned in more than the 30% of leagues that he's owned in. We'll say that. Because that's way too low. He should be owned in at least another 30% of leagues just for those four assists alone, basically. The young gun of the night. What the hell do we do with this guy? Nikola Mirotic of the Chicago Bulls played 31 minutes. He went 17-5-7. He had 4 triples, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and went 6 of 8 from the field. This is why we had him projected so high, because when he plays, his fantasy value is absolutely through the roof. Like, that is just, that is the one of the best sort of 9 cat, apart from his free throws, it's a positive contribution in points, threes, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, field goal percentage, and didn't have a turnover. It's an eight cat line in a 9 cat league. Just superb. But the theory that I mentioned the other day about Hoiberg and Mirotic is if Mirotic starts hot, he'll play big minutes. If he misses his first couple of shots, Hoiberg yanks him. And we can't do anything about that for fantasy. You can say, you can't even say, oh, it's matchup based. It's not. It's, does he miss his first 2 shots? Does he miss his first 3 shots? If so, banished. If not, big minutes, big production. We know he's got the talent. We know he's got the ability. We know he's got the fantasy potential. But we don't know if he's going to hit those first 2 shots. And that seems to be all that matters, which to me is a shit way of going about coaching. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because you ruin a guy's confidence and then he gets out there tense. I've got to hit my first couple of shots or else I'm only going to play 15 minutes. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense to me. We saw the Bulls run with Mirotic and Portis as the front court combination today a lot, and I love that combination. It worked brilliantly. It is the future of the front court for this team. Gibson, Noah, and Gasol are all older. Mirotic and Portis are the two guys who are the future of this team. Someone needs to go, but who knows who it's going to be. Mirotic should still be owned in a 12-team. In a 10-team league, I can understand moving on. But when you look at this, this is just so tantalizing. And look, he could probably play 16 minutes in the next game. But he was dominant in this one. He hit a 3 from, seriously, his foot was almost in the circle, one of the threes he hit. It was just ridiculous. He's super talented. Let's hope this jumpstarts his season. But for now, Nikola Mirotic is going to continue to frustrate. But if he was available in a 12-team league, you surely would have someone to go and drop, to go and add him if someone dropped him, because you won't find anyone with this much potential on the waiver wire. You won't find anyone who contributes in every single category. And normally he'd be a guy who would have given you a high free throw percentage as well. So he could have had the full 9 cat. Like, he almost won the monstrous line of the night tonight, just pipped by John Wall. But a huge, huge night from Nikola Mirotic. The concern is what the Bulls do and what happens when Noah comes back as well. But hopefully, I don't agree with them playing him at the 3, but he is better than Snell. He is better than Doug McDermott. So maybe they can make it work there and clear out some minutes in the front court, because it's going to be a real interesting thing. And I'll talk about it when we get more into the Bulls a little bit later. But a huge night from Nikola Mirotic. The dud of the night, I'm going to go with Chandler Parsons of the Dallas Mavericks. He played 27 minutes. The Mavericks got smashed by the Heat. 4 points for Parsons, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block, 2 of 8 shooting. Not his greatest night at all. He'd put in some pretty strong performances, but the last couple of games, he's been a little bit off. Not panicking, not worrying, not doing anything with it, really. Just play it out and see what happens with Chandler Parsons. There's not much more you can do. The DFS value player of the night was Mirotic at 4,700. He put up 41.5 points. I was thinking before, I'm not sure whether it's any value to people, but maybe when we do the DFS value play of the day, is it worth me going through the day before's games and giving you the perfect lineup? Like, if you had this lineup, this was the maximum you could have scored. Does anyone think there's any value in that? Let me know what you think. And if you think it's something that's worth doing, I'll discuss it. I'll go through the perfect optimal lineup from the day before and see if there's anything we can get out of it. Let me know if that's something that interests you. If you think it's a waste of time, I won't waste my time doing it. But if you think it's something that's worthwhile, let me know and we'll go from there and see if we can incorporate that into the show. All right, that's it for the Daily Awards. Let's now go through the games from Friday, bring them up on the screen and talk about them in a little bit more detail. There we go. Up on the screen for you guys to enjoy. The first game of the night was the Orlando Magic and the Washington Wizards. We saw a Victor Oladipo game, which we haven't seen for a very long time. 31 minutes for Oladipo, 20 points, 5 assists, 4 steals, and 2 threes. The potential for him is obviously still there. Hasn't got anywhere close to it this season for numerous reasons. His own play, Scott Skiles, all that sort of stuff. But obviously, he still has to be held on to. This is a great sign for him. Let's see how that moves moving forward. I'm not all that confident that's going to happen all that often. It really depends. And we know that Skiles is quite volatile with what he does. Lord Alfred Payton played just 24 minutes here. Evan Fournier played 28, and that allowed Oladipo to get that extra run. Payton was pretty bad, 1 of 6. That one was a three-pointer, which is a little bit odd for him also. Added 7 assists and a steal, so it helped a little bit in those areas. Not his greatest night. And Fournier went 11, 2, and 3. That was a little bit down. Look, the whole Magic team was down. Nick Vucevic only went 14 and 7 with a steal and a block, and Toby Harris went 13 and 10. Probably the most interesting thing from looking at the Magic, apart from Oladipo, was Aaron Gordon getting 25 minutes for the second consecutive game. 6, 7, and 3. So the box score didn't really blow you away. But the fact that he's at 25 minutes the last two games makes me want to have a look at him and think, if I've got a spot in my roster in a 12-team league, maybe I'll take a flyer, because he'll be a guy that will get you steals and blocks and can put up big, diverse lines, Nikola Mirotic-esque sort of lines where he contributes in lots of categories. And if he's getting 25 minutes plus, because it's not like Channing Frye's playing well, it's not like Andrew Nicholson's playing well, it's not like Jason Smith's playing well, it's not like these guys are good players. If he starts producing Gordon, he's obviously got a future there. Maybe Skiles is trying to teach him something for the first couple of months. If he pushes to 25, 27 minutes a night, he's going to have 12-team value. So have a look at him now. It's trending in the right direction. Not necessarily a must-own, but it's something that you should consider and see, because the upside is definitely there for Aaron Gordon. Another big game for Otto Porter from the Wizards, 20 and 11, 3 assists, 4 steals, a block, and 2 three-pointers. He is less than 70% owned. I do not know how that's happening. Make sure that he's owned in your league. He's come back absolutely flying since the injury kept him out for those few games. Massive, massive numbers from Porter. Marcin Gortat, 10 and 14 with a steal and a block. He's strong. Season continues. Ramon Sessions, he just keeps getting it done. Me and Seth talked about this on yesterday's program. 28 minutes. 13, 5, and 4, 2 threes. Just continually just providing solid, low-end value. It's not 12-team value, but there's a stack of DFS value in him. And 14-teamers, he's just getting you that production basically every single night. Garrett Temple, sort of back on track, 11 points in 29 minutes, but hopefully you're not rostering him in most leagues. And Kelly Oubre got 21 minutes as the backup 3, 7 and 5, and he's starting to show a little bit as well. Jared Dudley was pretty poor. 3 of 11 for 7 points, 4 rebounds, but did add 2 steals. And you think if he was shooting at his regular rate, the line would have looked a bit better. He's still more of a 14-team league at this point. Drew Gooden returned. Drew Gooden got injured again. This team is just... there's 5 guys out for this team. Gooden, Neal, Allen Anderson, Nene, and Bradley Beal. It's tough for them to continue to go like this, but that's a big win for them. They need some of these guys back. They need Neal and Anderson and Beal. That's a lot of wing depth that's gone, and that's contributing to Porter putting up these bigger lines. That's contributing to Temple actually playing at all. It's contributing to Sessions getting some run. It's contributing to Oubre getting more run than he was getting at the start of the year. But I would say that Sessions and Oubre have worked themselves into a decent role moving forward. I think they've played really, really well in the opportunity that they've had. The next game up for us to take a look at is the Charlotte Hornets and the Toronto Raptors. Big victory for the Raptors here, but we'll start with the Hornets. Cody Zeller, another big game, 15 and 9, 3 blocks in 30 minutes. To me, he's a must-own. I know most people probably don't agree with that, but he's putting up big lines. That's 3 in a row. Al Jefferson's out. Al Jefferson's also been bad. Spencer Hawes is out, but Zeller's the guy. I really like where this is headed for Cody Zeller. Kemba Walker was big again, 18, 5, and 3, 4 steals, a block, and 2 triples. pretty standard Kemba Walker field goal percentage from the last couple of years, 7 of 21, but definitely not what he'd been doing this year. But still, you love his production. And Frank Kaminsky's the other guy who's impressed me. 13 and 4, a 3, 2 assists and 3 steals. He's not quite a must-own 12-team league guy, but while Spencer Hawes is out, you could do worse than owning Kaminsky. He's got DFS value. He's definitely got 14-team league value. And Marvin Williams is seeing his role reduced. Now, Williams was okay here. 17 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 triples with a block. But he's not a must-own player anymore. He's more of a 14-team league guy as well. So if you're holding him in a 12-team league, just look to see what else is around. Nick Batum played a massive 42 minutes, so his toe must be all right. 14, 3, and 7 with 3 three-pointers. And there was no Jeremy Lin in this game, so Jeremy Lamb played 28 minutes, 5 and 6 on 2 of 10 shooting. He's not worth owning in 12-team leagues. Onto the Raptors, Kyle Lowry got a sprained ankle. He is probable for the next game. He did play 41 minutes here, 18, 5, and 11, 2 threes and 2 steals. Pretty good performance. DeMar DeRozan still dropped 23 points, but the other areas where he's been helping you by adding rebounds and assists, he was a little bit lacking today. He did hit 2 threes, he did have a steal, and he did go 7 of 7 from the free throw line, but not his best game overall. Jonas Valanciunas played 24 minutes and went 10 and 13. Well, Bismack Biyombo also played 24 minutes, splitting the center role between them. 6 and 11 for Biyombo for 4 and 4 blocks. Biyombo's still getting enough run at the moment to be used in standard leagues for those rebounds and block numbers, but by no means is he a must-own guy. And Valanciunas is just working his way back into things, and it's a nice double-double in 24 minutes for him. Patrick Patterson had probably his best game of the year, 14 and 6 with 4 triples. He is averaging 5 points per game this year, and he is shooting at less than 40%. So the fact that he went 4 of 6 from 3 can be considered somewhat of a fluke. And Damari Carroll still only got 25 minutes, but a better night, 14 and 3 with 4 triples and 2 steals. So he's getting back in on track after his injury. Terrence Ross was reduced to 22 minutes, 8 and 6 with 2 threes. Not a bad night. He's a back-end 12-team league guy, and Corey Joseph chimed in 6 dimes in his 18 minutes, but his minutes have seen a sharp reduction with the play of Terrence Ross of late. Dallas and Miami, the next game, Zaza Pachulia, another double-double. This guy just double-doubles every game, basically. 14 and 13 with a steal and a block in 25 minutes, being one of the surprises of the year, and Wes Matthews had 4 threes for 12 points. Otherwise, for the Mavericks, it was just a lot of yuckness. Darren Williams returned, but he played off the bench. 20 minutes, 9 points and 5 assists, while JJ Barea went 6 points and 5 assists in the starting role in 26 minutes. Now, Williams is going to retake the starting role. He's going to retake 30 minutes. Barea is going to go back to about 20 minutes. So consider that if you own Barea in a standard league and there's someone else you want, you can pretty safely cut him. He might get another 26 minutes in the next game, but I'm not overly concerned about him holding much value. Devin Harris, back spasms again. The back is bothering him. He's likely going to be out a couple of games. So that's going to allow Barea to still get these 20 minutes and Felton to get the 20 minutes while Williams works his way back up to getting 30. So if you want to hold Barea for another couple of games, I can understand that, but I don't think that there's going to be much long-term value in him. Dirk had 11 points and not a lot else. And we even had John Jenkins seeing 8 minutes in this game. So that's the sign that the game was a pretty significant blowout. Onto the Heat. Me and Seth talked yesterday. We talked Dwayne Wade, and I said, oh, yeah, he's going to play. I said, Wade is good value if he plays. And I said, oh, we've got no reason to think he won't play. Next minute, out of the starting lineup with the flu. And I'm sure every one of you has seen the Instagram post going around of Dwayne Wade suffering the flu from his New Year's Eve party. Streamers in mouth, drinks in hand. I'm sure the flu was quite severe for him the night before. Yeah. He still played. He played 19 minutes, 10, 2, and 7. So overall, if you did end up starting him, you wouldn't be too dishappy. Dishappy? That's not a word. You wouldn't be too unhappy with getting the 7 assists out of him. Hassan Whiteside was monstrous, 25 and 19 with a block on 12 of 16 shooting. And Goran Dragic had another decent night, 15, 4, and 7, 3 steals and a triple. Gerald Green also got hot. He played the extra minutes with Wade out, 33 minutes, 9, 3, and 2 with 2 triples, and Tyler Johnson started in place of Wade. Couldn't get much going there, 8 and 3 with a 3-pointer in 25 minutes. I'd imagine Green will drop back down to that 21-22 level that we've been seeing from him the last couple of games. Not much else to talk about Miami Heat-wise, I don't think. The next game, the New York Knicks and the Chicago Bulls. Mallow 20.7 rebounds, 3 assists, a pretty average game from him. And just when I thought I'd figured out when Robin Lopez was going to play, he went back to 22 minutes. 4.6 rebounds, 2 blocks. They're still relatively productive, but I don't really love him for a 12-team league. And Kristaps Porzingis is dropping off. 4 of 14 shooting, not good. 9 and 9, still a steal, a block, and a 3, though. A nice triple one. Still providing value, clearly, but not quite as good as we were seeing earlier on. And the rest of the Knicks were a mess. My boy Aaron Aflalo played 29 minutes for 4 points and 1 rebound. He is just not good. He is barely inside the top 300 for the last 2 weeks. If he doesn't score, he provides no value. And even when he scores, he's still a below average scorer. He, to me, has no place in a 12-team league. The game was over in about 5 minutes in this one. So don't get too fussed by looking at Langston Galloway playing only 15 minutes. It was not an ideal situation from the Knicks. On to the Bulls. I've already talked enough about Nikola Mirotic. What about Bobby Portis? Played 30 minutes, went 16-10 with 2 threes and 2 assists. I think he has to be owned in 12-team leagues now. Fred Hoiberg is continually gushing about him. We've got to find minutes for him. He's earned his spot in the rotation. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean 30 minutes? Does it mean 20 minutes? Does it mean 17 minutes? We don't know. But if Mirotic is going to play the 3, Portis, Gasol, and Gibson are going to play the 4 and 5, there's minutes there. When Noah comes back, who's going to lose it? I think Gibson's going to lose minutes. I think Portis is going to lose the minutes. Now, Gibson also only played 25 in this one. The game was over pretty quickly. Gasol only played 29 as well, so that allowed Mirotic and Portis to get that extra run. So I don't imagine 30 minutes a night is in his foreseeable future, but he's definitely worth owning and seeing how this rotation plays out, because there's no chance that Hoiberg has got anything settled. He still doesn't know exactly what he's doing with it. Jimmy Butler went 23, 4, and 6, a steal and a block. And Dougie McDermott added 13 points in his 20 minutes. Taj was disappointing, 7 and 9 with 2 blocks, but we're still holding on to him. And Aaron Brooks could not get anything happening, unlike the last game. 13 minutes for Brooks, 7 points and 2 assists. Not a great night. And again, Hoiberg just hasn't got the rotations quite settled yet. The last game of the night, what a barn burner this was. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Los Angeles Lakers. This was putrid. The Sixers shot 37% from the field. The Lakers shot 38. It was just disgusting to watch. But it was good to see Nerlens Noel being the Nerlens Noel of last season. 15-12, 3 steals, 3 blocks. He is a defensive animal again. He's double-doubling. He's putting up big numbers. He is on fire. And the Sixers look so much better with him and Okafor not playing together. Okafor played just 23 minutes, 12-4 on 6 of 10 shooting with a block. And it's hard to think that they're going to go back and start running Okafor and Noel together a lot, because Noel looks better, the team looks better, and Okafor looks better as well. It's going to be hard for me to think that's going to be the case. We'll see. Jeremy Grant's been all right, 9-7 in 31 minutes with a block. And those three are going to form, obviously, the core of that front court rotation. Rishon Holmes only got 8 minutes in this one. Ish Smith wasn't the greatest night for Ish. He went 3 of 19, which is not good. 9-4-3, not his greatest night. And Isaiah Cannon tried to rival him. He went 2 of 11 for 7-4. He is not a standard league guy, though, Cannon. Nick Stauskas, 4 points only in 29 minutes. Can't get anything going. And TJ McConnell got a fair bit of run, oddly enough. 23 minutes for McConnell, 12, 4, and 7 with a block and a 3, not picking him back up in 12-team leagues. But interesting to know that Kendall Marshall now has been a healthy scratch in the last 2 games. So it's clearly Smith, Cannon, and McConnell who are going to be handling the point guard duties for the Sixers. The last team to look at is the Lakers. Lou Williams, of course, he played 37 minutes, because why wouldn't you play him 37 minutes? 24, 4, and 5, 2 triples and a block. While D'Angelo Russell was limited to 26, he went 6-4-5, 2 steals and a block. A really great fantasy sort of line there. If only he could have hit more than 3 of 14 from the field. Still think he should be owned, but there'll be some disappointing nights ahead with a disappointing coach. Jordan Clarkson played 33 minutes. He scored 19 points, but it took him 17 shots to get there. 6 of 17, 2 rebounds and 3 assists. Not the greatest fantasy night from him. While Julius Randle went 15-9 and 2 steals. A good night from him. He just needs more minutes. Larry Nance is looking good, though. 24 minutes for Nance, 8 points, 14 rebounds. Not much else, but he is an athletic guy, so the defensive numbers will come. Kobe was also a late scratch in this one, so Anthony Brown got the start, and he played 22 minutes. Didn't offer much, but I do like Brown's potential. I think he can develop into something pretty decent. And Brandon Bass continuing to provide fantasy value somehow. 5-4 for him, 2 steals and 2 blocks in 25 minutes. And you might say that, oh, yeah, give the minutes to Randall, give them to Nance, but at least it's Bass getting them and not Sacre. Like, Bass is a serviceable NBA player. Sacre is barely an NBL player. And Roy Hibbert was useless. 3-5 with 2 blocks in 23 minutes. They might as well just phase Hibbert out of the rotation with the way that he's going at the moment. He's barely providing anything to this team. All right, that is it for the daily review portion of the podcast. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back to preview the massive day of action on Saturday. I saw ya. We are back. Haven't heard that song for a while. That's Don't Go by a great listener of the podcast, Bryce Whitney, and his band. We're going to alternate those, well, not alternate, just mix up the songs that we play in the break in the middle of the show. If you are in a band and you want to contribute a song to that mix as well, please let me know, and we can see if we can squeeze one of your songs into the mix also. All right, there are 11 games on Saturday. Let's get stuck into them straight away. The Brooklyn Nets and the Boston Celtics. The first game of the night, the Celtics are favored by 9. They have, all, of course, extra incentive to beat the Nets because the Nets they are getting the Nets draft choice. Boston by 9 is the spread. 204.5 is the total. And RJ Hunter is considered questionable. He missed some practice with a shoulder, but he's not really an integral part of the rotation anyway. Kelly Olynyk is a pretty decent tournament play at 4,300, but with Brad Stevens as the coach, he's a very risky cash game play, but we know he's got significant upside. And the Nets team does not pose that a massive sort of challenge, so I don't mind using him. I also like Avery Bradley, who's been a little bit quiet, but at 5,100, again, the Nets are just putrid against shooting guards. This could be a spot for him to go 26, 27, 30 fantasy points and really exceed value. So 5,100 for him is not a terrible price. Jared Sullinger hasn't been returning value. He's only at 5,400 now, but he's only averaging 23 minutes across the last 5 games. It's not enough for me. I don't want to spend that money up on him. Isaiah Thomas, 8,100. It feels too expensive. He needs to go for 40 points. And yes, the Nets do allow point guards to go pretty big. Not sure with Marcus Smart getting back and them saying they're going to be looking to increase Smart's minutes. That might mean 2 minutes less for Thomas. And that might be enough to sort of think he's not going to approach 40. I think 35 is in play, but I'm not sure that 40 is the right spot. 5,900 for Jay Crowder. I don't mind it. He almost dropped 30 in the last game. He's been playing really consistently. He's got an average of 30 across his last 5. You could do a lot worse than putting Jay Crowder in, especially going up against the Nets. I could say that for most of the Boston players, to be honest. Thad Young, 6,700. He's a 36 average across his last 5. That's great for that sort of price tag. And the Celtics are really lenient against opposition power forward, so Thad Young's in a pretty nice spot here as well. And Bojan Bogdanovic at 4,100 has been playing well. 22 point average across his last 3, 21 across the last 5. That's a low salary, a pretty decent tournament play, because if he gets hot, and we know the minutes are there, if he gets hot though and the shots start falling, he's going to start being able to produce. Brook Lopez at 8,700, he's been on fire, but 8,700 is a lot of salary. I don't hate using it, though. You're going to need to hope that he gets 43 points, so that's the problem. Now, he's averaging over that his last 5 games. He's at 48 average over his last 3. So there is some consistency there with him, but you know, I'm not overly sold on it. I reckon he can probably do better at center, but just think he has been absolutely on fire of lately. So was Evan Turner. At 5,400, you could do worse than using him as well. He's got a 27.4 average across his last 3 games. But again, as Smart starts to get more minutes, Turner will probably get cut back. Jarrett Jack at 6,600, don't want to use him against the Celtics. Same goes with Shane Larkin. You do not want to use point guards against the Celtics. Not running Marcus Smart out there yet either, coming back from his injury. The Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings, which team is more dysfunctional? Yeah, it's probably the Suns at the moment, as odd as that is after everything that happened with the Kings over the preseason and offseason. Rudy Gay is questionable with an Achilles issue. For the Suns, John Lua with his ankle and Ronnie Price with his toe. We need to know whether those guys are going to play because they're obviously going to have an impact. Now, there's a lot of fantasy value here, stacks, potentially. TJ Warren at 4,600. He put a 50 spot up in the last game. He's averaging 25 across his last five. The minutes are up for him. He's averaging 30 across his last three games. He is a fantastic play. Brandon Knight at 6,500. You have to think that some of his usage is going to go up, and point guards love going against the Kings. There's value there for him. John Lua, if he plays, I think is decent value as well. At 4,600 and Markieff Morris not getting into the rotation, I think Lua's not a bad play, but I'm a little bit hesitant with his ankle. Devin Booker at 3,600. At 3,600, if he gives you 20 points, it's boom. It's 5.5x value, and that's fantastic. And again, the Kings are beautiful for fantasy wings. I love using Devin Booker. PJ Tucker at 4,300. He's got a 27.8 average across his last three games. He's been getting a stack of minutes. He put up 40 in the last game. I think this is a great spot to use PJ Tucker as well. I like using both. I like Tucker. I like Warren a lot also, as I mentioned earlier. There's a lot of fantasy value here. If John Lua's out, Mirza Teletovic at 3,700. He's a great tournament play. Put up 23.6 in the last game at 3,700. That's 6x value. That's definitely in play for, you know, a tournament, if Lua is out, of course. Rajon Rondo at 7,800. The salary is coming down. I still don't really like him at that spot, but again, the Suns could allow him to put up some big numbers, so don't completely write him off. And Tyson Chandler's down to 4,200. He's actually averaging 24.4 points across the last three, put up 29 in the last one, has seen an uptick in the last few games. Don't hate using him. He's not going to be very highly owned, I wouldn't have thought. But things are starting to work for him. As much as I disagree with playing him over Alex Lynn, that's what's currently happening. 9,700 for Boogie Cousins. It is expensive and he hasn't been really producing, but I'm okay using it. Hopefully he turns it around. We know that he's got 50-point upside. The last three games, they've only yielded 34 points per contest, which is not very much. And the Suns have been able to restrict opposition centers a little bit. So if I'm spending up $10,000, he's probably not the guy that I want to look at. I do like Omri Caspi at 5,700. A little bit of a down game in the last one, but I'd look for him to bounce back and get close to 30 points. And Darren Collison at 5,400 is not a bad guy. He's been pretty consistent, giving you consistent numbers. And if anything happens with Rondo, and Rondo gets limited by fouls or ejections or injuries or whatever, Collison's going to go through the roof. So he's a guy that in a tournament is definitely worth looking at. Alex Len, who knows if he's going to get enough minutes, so I will steer clear of him. And don't use Markieff Morris. It's unlikely he even sees the court at all. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Charlotte Hornets are up next. The Thunder are favored by 6.5. The total is 208.5 points. Spencer Hawes, who missed the last couple of games with that back issue, is questionable, and Jeremy Lin, who's missed the last two with his ankle, are questionable. Now, Lin, if he plays at 5,300, and if we know he's going to play 30 minutes, he'd be a great play. The problem is, we don't know if he's going to play, and if he does, they might ease him back after missing a couple with an ankle. Don't think I want to get him out there. Nick Batum at 7,400. Yeah, not bad. I think there's definitely some value in him. A little bit of a quiet game for him in the last one, but they're relying upon him heavily, so you can look for him to have a decent night, I think. Kevin Durant is now under $10,000. At 9,800, there's a lot of value in Kevin Durant at under $10,000. He still needs to give you 50 points, though, and he's averaging 40.5, so that's not too bad. I'm not writing him down as the first name down in the lineup. I'll say that much. But coming under 10,000, he's worth looking at. Serge Ibaka at 6,200, not quite. It's just not giving you enough value at that spot. Now Russell Westbrook becomes interesting here. He's at 11,000. That salary is massive, but his average over his last five games is 55. That's 5x value on average. He put up 65 in the last game. It's really hard not to use him with the way that he's racking up stats. Cody Zeller, 4,700, on fire lately. Love him as a play. Look, he can disappoint, definitely. He's not the most consistent guy in the world, but he has been the last three games. He's been putting up really nice numbers. I like using him. And 4,100 for Frank Kaminsky. Yeah, I can consider using him, but I would rather spend the extra 600 and get Cody Zeller into my lineup. Kemba Walker at 8,600. Just been flat out dominating. A 47.8 point average across his last three games at 8,600. Looks pretty good. And Westbrook is not a good defender. I'm okay with putting Walker in if you wanted to save. You know, you're saving 2,500 on Westbrook. Maybe you could get 50 points out of Walker as well. So I think that he's a pretty good option to get out there. Not the worst guy to look at if you're spending up big at the point guard position. Detroit and Indiana. The Pacers are favored by 4.5. The total here is 201.5 points. No real injury concerns to really monitor in this one. Andre Drummond at 9,400. He's a consistent 40-point-a-night guy on most nights. The Pacers do restrict centers a little bit, so bear that in mind. If I'm spending up on a center, I would rather spend it up on Brook Lopez than Andre Drummond, to be honest. Just because you're saving an extra $500 or $600 there for similar production, what we've seen lately. Not much else really do I really love in this one. George Hill at 5,600, he's been playing a little bit better, but not when you have to have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope on him. Not sure I love that one. Don't love Monte Ellis. Marcus Morris at 5,400, he's just been doing nothing lately. Paul George had a big game in the last one, but 8,600 and against the Pistons, it's not a good spot for Paul George. And Reggie Jackson at 7,500, he's not returning value on that salary, only a 29-point average across his last five games. And George Hill is a pretty decent defender, so I think we leave him alone. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is strictly a tournament guy, but he put up 37 in the last game, and he's shown that when he gets hot, he's able to do it for a few games in a row. So let's see how that plays out. As for the Pacers' big men, Yamahimi, Jordan Hill, they missed the last game. They might return. There's no value in using any of those guys. And Brandon Jennings at 5,600, that salary is way too high for a guy two games into a recovery from an Achilles tendon tear. We are not using Brandon Jennings. The Orlando Magic and the Cleveland Cavaliers, the last two times these two teams faced off, it was an annihilation by the Cavs and it really limited their fantasy value. So bear that in mind. That can happen in any game though, but just bear that in mind that there's blowout potential. 4,500 for Tristan Thompson, I do like it. He's playing big minutes. He's not producing massive amounts, but the 21.4 he put up in the last game, at 4,500, that's almost 5x value. And the Magic do allow the centers and big men to put up decent numbers. Don't hate using him at 4,500. I think he's not a bad low-priced cash game guy. LeBron at 9,800, he's also under 10,000. Him and Kevin Durant have both dropped under 10. I would rather use LeBron than use Kevin Durant, to be honest, even though LeBron's output has been a little bit less of late. 6,000 for Lord Alfred Payton. No one's going to be using him because he has been yuck. His three-game average is 7 points. Throw it in a tournament. He can get hot, we know that, but I think that the ankle is still bothering him, so definitely not for cash games. And Aaron Gordon at 3,700. I mentioned that it's trending up. His production hasn't quite got there, but at 3,700, you could get lucky in one of your tournament lineups. Still off Victor Oladipo. Don't want Kevin Love at 7,300. Don't want Kyrie Irving. Don't want Toby Harris. Matthew Dellavedova at 4,500. No, I don't think so. And 8,200 for Nick Vucevic. Not a terrible price. A little bit quiet in the last couple of games, though. And the Cavs are pretty good against centers, so I think we'll leave him alone. Much like we'll do with Evan Fournier when he's got Iman Shumpert on him, we can leave that one alone. And we'll also leave Iman Shumpert alone. So not much fantasy value in that Orlando-Cleveland game, I don't think. Milwaukee versus Minnesota. The Timberwolves are favored by 1. The total here is 201.5. Should have Kevin Garnett back after he missed the last game due to rest. Zach LaVine, 4,700. That salary has come down, and this is more appealing. Now, he's been really, really bad lately, but at 4,700, I don't mind throwing him into a tournament and seeing how it works out, but definitely not a cash gameplay. Carl Anthony Towns is almost cracking 8,000. He's at 7,900, but he's almost a 40-point guy most nights. Maybe not. Let's try 35 points most nights. At 7,900, I think you could do a lot worse than using him. Same with Ricky Rubio at 7,600. He's a 32 average across his last five games. Gorgui Dieng has also been a little bit quiet lately. At 5,000, his ownership will probably be low, but I do like him to have a bit of a better output in this one. Andrew Wiggins at 6,700. I just want his salary to come under 7,000. Under 6,000. He's at a 30-point average across his last five. If he was at 5,800, I think he'd be a great play. Don't want to spend up on that extra 700, though. Nor do I want to spend on Greg Monroe, who's been a little bit quiet, and especially against Carl Anthony Towns, who does shut down opposition centers. We'll leave our John Henson out of it as well. Maybe you can throw Henson into a tournament. Maybe that's worth looking at. He's at 3,800. Michael Carter-Williams, 6,700. Played really well lately, averaging over 30 in his last five games. A pretty decent matchup for him here. I'm okay with throwing him out there. And 6,800 for Chris Middleton, it's very hard to avoid using Chris Middleton. He's averaging 38 across the last three games. He's been absolutely destroying teams the last two. Look for him to get out there. I don't think Tayshaun Prince is going to cause him too much concern. Giannis Antetokounmpo, a 32-point average, but it's 7,000. Not quite enough for me, so I think we can let him go. Same with OJ Mayo, same with Jared Bayless. Their salaries are just a little bit too high for the uncertain role that they have in this game. Not much else to really go on with that one, I don't think. The New Orleans Pelicans, I was going to call them the Saints then for a sec. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are favored by 3. The total is 207.5. Devin Harris is doubtful with that back issue, so he will likely miss. This is tough for me to say, but $4,000 for Norris Cole is worth looking at. He's played over 30 minutes the last two games. He's got a 21-point average in his last three, and at 4,000, if he gives you 25 points, bang, that's over 6x value. I don't agree with him getting 30 minutes, but if Elvin Gentry is going to make a mistake and play him 30 minutes, then you have to take that into consideration at 4,000. JJ Barea at 4,400, we don't know what sort of role he's going to have. I think he'll still play 25 minutes or so, so maybe a tournament, but not all that confident in him. And Drew Holiday at 5,400 has been a little bit disappointing lately, only a 20-point average across his last five games. The restrictions are off for him, though. Not a tough matchup. Maybe I'd consider using him. Eric Gordon at 4,800, not for me. 10,100 for Anthony Davis. Again, like Durant, like James, the value's been a little bit depressed for these guys. He's averaging less than 40 across his last three games, but he's due to break back out. His average over his last five is 45.8, so you know he was going massive before that. I'm okay with getting Anthony Davis out there as well. Chandler Parsons at 5,200, slumping again. Wes Matthews at 51, no thanks. Ryan Anderson at 56, too expensive for anything that he's been giving you. And Tyreek Evans at 7,500. Yeah, I can see Tyreek getting out there. 35-point average across the last three games, 34.5 across his last five. The Mavericks do shut down the point guards fairly well, somehow. Don't know how they do it, but they do in terms of their fantasy point production. But Tyreek is still an okay guy to look at. I also like Zaza Pachulia at 6,500. He's a 30-point guy across the last three. Gave us 33 again today. That's basically what he's been doing. Pelicans against big men is a nice matchup. I think we can get Zaza in there. Darren Williams, yeah, when he gets back to 30 minutes, you consider him, but not if he's playing 20 minutes off the bench. So let's leave him out of this, and I don't think we want to really run Raymond Felton out there either. The San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets. Tim Duncan will be back after missing the last couple of games, so no more Boban Marjanovic, unfortunately. Fantasy-wise, Kawhi Leonard at 8,600. Rockets bump for him. He's also awesome. He's been a little bit underwhelming as well, though. That's why his salary's dropped down to 8,600. This is a really good spot if you want to spend up at that position. James Harden. Kawhi Leonard's going to be on him. Danny Green's going to be on him. Forget it. I don't want to use James Harden. This is not the spot to use him. Clint Capella at 5,000. Tournaments only, I think. LaMarcus Aldridge at 7,000. Now, does LaMarcus Aldridge for the Spurs, that's obviously a depressed value, or LaMarcus Aldridge versus the Rockets, that's increased value. Which one of them works out best? He's got a 26-point average across his last three games. He's at 7,000. I'd probably want him under 7,000. But I'm okay with using him. I think there's a little bit of value there, but I'm not overly sold. Ty Lawson at 3,800, I'd throw him into a tournament and see how that works out. Not much else that I really love here. Dwight at 7,900 against the Spurs, no thanks. I mentioned Harden, no thanks. Patrick Beverley, nope, we'll leave that alone as well. And Tony Parker at 5,900, I'd consider Tony Parker. He's got almost a 30-point average across those last three games. And again, the Rockets bump is pretty real, and he could have a decent game. So don't discount Tony Parker. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Utah Jazz the next game. No spread yet, because we're waiting on the status of Derek Favors, who's missed the last couple of games. for the Jazz. Matt Barnes is still suspended, so he's going to be out, so Zach Randolph will be starting again. Derek Favors at 7,700. No thanks. Coming back from injury, if he even plays, we can leave him out of it. 6,700 for Mike Conley, though. I do like using him. 35-point average across the last three. A bit of a quiet game in the last one. Think he's worth it. And if Favors is out, 7,600 for Gordon Hayward still seems like a really good price. Trey Burke at 5,000. If Favors is out, I'm going on Trey Burke as well. He's been playing fantastically. 30-point average across the last three. And that's really benefited him without Favors there. And 4,900 for Rod Hood. Almost put up 40 in the last game. Not a bad guy to get out there and give it a shot. 6,100 for Zach Randolph. Yeah, I can see him getting 30 points, but if Favors plays, I'll probably leave him alone. And Marcus Soles at 8,100. You need him to give you 40 points. I don't think he can give you 40 points here, so I don't reckon we'll go and throw him out there. If there's no Favors, Jeff Withey's at 4,200. He's been averaging 28.8 across the last three. He's definitely a guy you want to get out there if Favors isn't playing, because it's a cheap guy who can provide you 6, 7x value, which can be really, really helpful, especially in a tournament. He could also give you nothing, but he's been playing quite well. The Denver Nuggets and the Golden State Warriors, obviously there's injuries are plenty here. Festus Ezeli is still questionable with his toe. Steph Curry is questionable with his leg. Harrison Barnes is doubtful with his ankle. Leandro Barbosa is doubtful with his shoulder. On the Nuggets side of things, Emmanuel Mudiay is doubtful with his ankle sprain. Danilo Gallinari will be back. And Yusuf Nurkic will be back. Can't wait to see Nurkic in there. But Nikola Jokic is questionable with a knee. So all in all, we know nothing about this game, about who's playing, who's not. Klay Thompson at 7,400 has really good value in this one, even if Steph plays. If Steph doesn't play against the Nuggets, I love Klay Thompson here. I think Andre Iguodala at 4,800 is a great value play against his old team. The extra run without Harrison Barnes there. He's averaging 24 across the last three. I think Andre is a good option here. And Andrew Bogut, if Festus Ezeli doesn't play, he played 36 minutes in the last one. Probably won't play that much here, but at 4,400, Bogut can put up 26 points, and return you 5x value. If there's no Emmanuel Mudiay, 5 grand for Jameer Nelson. It seems a little bit high, but he can be a 30-point guy pretty comfortably, so I'd look for him. The centers, Jokic, Lavernier, Nurkic. Not with Nurkic coming back into the fold. We just don't know how that's going to play out. I'd be leaving Kenneth Faried alone. Same thing goes with Darrell Arthur too. If there's no Steph, Draymond Green at 9,400 becomes really, really interesting. He put up 53 in the last game. He basically runs the team with Steph out. So he's worth a look, as is Sean Livingston at 3,900. He put up 29 in the last game without Curry. It's an easy matchup against the Nuggets. He should be looking for 30 minutes and 30 fantasy points would be a realistic goal. I also like Gary Harris. He's been giving you great numbers lately, almost top 30 in the last one. He's only at 4,400. I think that he is someone that you can look at as well. The last game of the night, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 12.5. The total is 210 in this game. There is blowout potential in this one. So that's going to play into the part of looking at guys like DeAndre Jordan and Chris Paul. Jordan's price at just 7,800, though. He's got a 36-point average across the last three. I reckon he could just destroy this team. I'm all for using DeAndre Jordan. And Chris Paul at 8,900, I don't reckon that many people will be on him. He had a really bad game in the last one. He's consistently around the 35-38-point mark. And you do need him to be higher than that. But against the Sixers, he could be used. I don't think he's the best play out there, but he's not terrible. If it's going to be a blowout, and there's a massive chance of that, Cole Aldrich at 3,900 is not the worst tournament option. He's actually averaging almost 22 points across his last three games in just 15 minutes. And he could see 15, 18 minutes in this game, 20 minutes even, if the game is a blowout. So in a tournament at 3,900, it could be the difference between finishing in the money or out of the money if you have him in one of your lineups. Jamal Crawford, Wes Johnson, Paul Pierce, Luke Marmute, I'll leave all those guys alone. On the Sixers, let's hope Ish Smith has a bounce back. Against Chris Paul, it's not a great spot for him, but at 5,800, I think you can look at using him. JJ Redick's been red hot at 5,000. I'm okay there. And Robert Covington is starting to look a little bit better. Still don't want to use him at 5,000, but he's worth a look. And Nerlens Noel, 6,300, dominating at the moment. Hard to avoid using him, but he's there is risk considering how badly he played at the start of the season, but he's on fire. 6,300, I'm okay with getting Nerlens Noel out there. I don't want to use Okafor, nor do I want to use most of these other guys. on the Sixers. There's just not enough value there for me to get them into a lineup. All right, let's bring up the DFS value plays for the day now. At point guard, ooh, I shudder. Norris Cole at 4,000. Brandon Knight at 6,500 and Russ Westbrook at 11,000. At shooting guard, Devin Booker at 36, Klay Thompson at 74, and there is no high-priced shooting guard that I like in Saturday's slate. Small forwards, I like PJ Tucker at 43, but you could also put TJ Warren there at 46, Omri Caspi at 57, and Kawhi Leonard at 86. For the power forwards, Tristan Thompson, 45, Thad Young, 67, and Anthony Davis, 10,100. And at center, Tyson Chandler, 4,200, Zaza Pachulia, 65, and DeAndre Jordan rounds things out at 7,800. We are done for today. Sorry for you guys watching live and listening to the podcast. It was a bit late today. Went out to watch the Melbourne Stars in the Big Bash League have a big victory over the Renegades. So that was good. Went and watched that home doing the podcast now. Make sure you are subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever good podcasts are sold. And check us out at our new home on Blog Talk Radio as well. There's lots of other great podcasts at Blog Talk Radio. And if you're finding us from Blog Talk, as I mentioned earlier, thank you. And I hope you enjoy what you hear. Let us know. Leave a review. Hit me up on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Also, there's Basketball Monster's Twitter account, which is a must follow during the day for up-to-the-minute news at BaskMonster. Check out hardwoodparoxysm.com and go ahead and visit the sponsors, moneyball.com.au, if you're living in Australia or New Zealand. We are done. Thanks, guys. Thanks for everything. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.